I call this meeting of the Minnesota House Education Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Before we begin today, it is our first hearing of the year, so I'm going to read some safety guidelines to make sure we all get through the people's business in order. So welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. And this goes for whoever is holding the gavel at any time. So the following expectations are: signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff, who you can identify with their gold or yellow ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed, and an alarm will go off when you have reached your time. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it, as it may be required for re-entry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines might result in removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone has the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. Well, now that that is out of the way, we will move to our first order of the business, which is approving the minutes from Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. Vice Chair Hill, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes? And if so, would you like to make a motion to approve them?
I have. So moved.
Rep. Hill moves to approve the minutes from Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, say no. The minutes are approved. And with that, I am going to be handing the gavel to Vice Chair Hill as I make my way to the testifiers table, but I believe Co-Chair Bennett has a few words to say while we are playing musical chairs here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome everybody who's in the audience and members. Good to see everybody back. Looking forward to another good session of education policy. So I just want to add here about today that the issues we're going to discuss are serious issues, and there are high emotions involved on both sides with this issue, on all sides. And I'm expecting a passionate debate on both sides, and that's okay. But at the same time, we'll always expect to treat each other respectfully, whether members, testifiers, or those who are observing. And we will not call names in this debate, nor will we claim or insinuate intentions. It just doesn't help with the debate and understanding each other. So I thank people ahead of time for doing those things. And I just want to add here that the immigration crisis that we're experiencing did not appear overnight. It's a result of years of the federal government's lack of action to secure our national border and also provide comprehensive immigration reform that welcomes and facilitates legal immigration. At the same time, we're dealing with schools. Whoops. And that's like a cue for something, but I don't know what it is. So, yeah. Okay, we'll keep going. So schools should not be put in the place of becoming the go-between or the middle person in these divisive situations. And shifting the responsibility to schools in these interactions, I don't believe, is fair nor right. Our job should be to provide clarity to schools on how to comply with federal law to keep our students and staff safe. To my knowledge, schools are not employing undocumented immigrants, nor are they denying access to public education based on immigration status. That's current federal law. Our schools are clearly not the problem. Our nation's immigration laws must be followed, and there should be cooperation from local jurisdictions. It's also my belief that federal immigration actions involving schools should be very rare and only with extenuating circumstances addressing a clear threat to public safety or children. Education Finance Co-Chair Crenshaw and I have recently sent a letter to federal immigration authorities stating just these things. It should be a rare occurrence that schools are involved in these situations. It's my hopes that the federal government will adjust their policies forthcoming. So if we want ICE away from schools, the solution in my mind is not more school mandates. Our schools don't deserve that. It's school solution cooperation between the federal, state, and local levels of government. So thanks for letting me have my say. And Chair, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bennett. And now that Co-Chair Jordan is settled in front of us, would you like to motion House File 3435 before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3435 before the committee to be placed on the general register.
Wonderful. Well, before we introduce the bill, I understand you have an author's amendment that you would like to offer to get the bill in the shape you prefer.
I do. I have an author's amendment. This amendment was written in consultation with lawyers and legal experts, and I think it better gets at intent of the bill, which is to provide separation between ICE agents and DHS and our schools, and I ask for member support to get the bill in the best shape to discuss it.
Would you like to offer the DE1?
Yes, I would also like to move the DE1 before the committee so we can do what I just asked.
Thank you. Chairman Jordan motions or moves to adopt the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The DE1 is adopted. Chair Jordan, please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I agree with much of what Representative Bennett just said. Our schools should not be in the position of enforcing our immigration laws. Every child in Minnesota has a right to an education, a right to an education. But lately, it has been impossible not to notice the profound impact ICE, DHS, and our federal government has had on Minnesota school children's ability to learn. You are about to hear from students, educators, administrators, and community members about how ICE's presence in and near schools has resulted in abducted children, terror, absenteeism, and forced schools to close across Minnesota. I will briefly explain the bill, but then we will go right to testimony to talk about why this is absolutely necessary right now. This bill as amended is modeled off of the previous Sensitive Spaces memo that was DHS policy for years until January 20th of last year. This bill would prohibit schools from allowing immigration action to occur on school grounds unless they are presented with a judicial warrant. Agents must present identification, and the superintendent and school council must be informed of this action. This bill would not prevent local law enforcement from responding to other emergencies. We're going to hear many stories. I know there are many, many testifiers here, and with that, I would like to give the community their opportunity to talk about what has been happening in their schools and what needs to be happening going forward to ensure that every child in Minnesota has access to education.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jordan. We will now move on to our testimony. On my list, our first testifier of the day is Dr. Brenda Lewis, and she will be followed by Christoph Dundas. Dr. Lewis, when you're ready, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. We are limiting our testimony to 2 minutes per speaker today. Thank you for being attentive to the buzzer.
Thank you so much. Brenda Lewis, Superintendent, Fridley Public Schools, co-chairs Jordan and Bennett, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. As I stated, my name is Brenda Lewis, Superintendent of Fridley Public Schools. We are a school system of 2,700 students. We are 80% students of color. We are 72% students who come from families living in poverty. We are heavy East African, heavy West African, heavy Hispanic Latino. Fridley Public Schools supports HF 3435. This bill would establish clear, consistent standards for when and how federal immigration enforcement may access school property. Specifically, it requires proper judicial warrants, identifications, and limits access to the areas specified in those warrants. This clarity is important for school districts that are responsible for maintaining safe, orderly, and predictable learning environments. In our district, immigration enforcement activities on our near school sites has had deep impacts on our students and our school operations. Since December, 112 students, again, we have 2,700, who were with us in December are no longer with us. In addition, approximately 400 students are currently participating in virtual learning. We did not have a virtual learning program prior. We built that in 4 days. These shifts have real academic consequences and significant mental health consequences. I'm so proud of the work that we have done around literacy, especially the last several years, and our recovery after COVID. I have now watched that slip away. Our students are not able to be in person. While we have the virtual learning option, it is simply not the same. And while I value virtual learning, our families have chosen virtual learning out of pure safety. The mental health impacts are so hard to imagine. We literally have children coming to school each day wondering if their friend has been here. Where are they? My own children literally say, oh, so-and-so hasn't been in class. I snapped them. They haven't snapped me back. I wonder if they've been taken. This is literally what it looks like in our district and many other districts. We cannot fulfill our educational mission when students and families are afraid to come to school. We cannot fulfill it when our operations are disrupted by unclear or inconsistent enforcement practices. Back in January of 2025, we built guidance, as did most other school districts in Minnesota. That guidance revolved around serving of warrants and how we would respond to that. I wish I could sit here and tell you that that was our worry now. It is not our worry. Our worry is all of the disruptions that have happened in my school system and many school systems across the state. We are here to simply say that I am not here about ICE enforcement, immigration policy. I am simply here to say we need to have our schools safe for children, families, and staff. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Up next on our list is Christopher Dundas, and he'll be followed by Josh Hermadine.
I'm not Mr. Dundas.
Please state your name
for the... I'm Josh Hermerding. Do you want me to go? Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Hermerding, and I'm a multilingual teacher at Lucy Laney Elementary in the Cleveland neighborhood of North Minneapolis. With my comment today, I want to paint a picture of what a school day at Lucy Laney has looked like during ICE's occupation of our neighborhood and why it requires the legislature to take real, concrete steps to establish our schools as safe zones again. Going to go a little quicker this time. I get into my car at 6:50. Before, I would go into school to prepare for class or connect with coworkers about student learning. Now I have to make a small loop around our school. Four times as of yesterday, ICE has been found by school staff illegally using our school parking lot to stage operations. 14 days in a row, ICE has been found staging within two blocks of the school during arrival of families, including today. If agents are around the school, I alert our neighbors and administration because ICE has demonstrated their lack of empathy toward children while conducting operations across Minneapolis. I'm scared and exhausted, and I haven't even entered the school. I teach Spanish at 8. Before, I would watch students eat breakfast and laugh with each other. Now I'm outside until right before I lead students to class because ICE circles the school until 8:45. We need more eyes to make sure our school community is safe. Then I take the students to the classroom. Outside on Penn Avenue, we hear car horns and a student says, I'm scared. What's gonna happen? I tell her I'm scared too. And I promise to protect them in every way that I can. I teach English at 9:30. Before, I used to have 35 students. Now I have 4 students total. All families, regardless of citizenship, are sheltering in place. ICE targets you based on the color of your skin and what language you speak on the north side. And our neighborhood runs hot with agents. If I'm lucky, I'm able to connect with parents, but a lot of times their phones are disconnected because they can't get anywhere to pay their bills. So this wheel of motion repeats until the end of the school day. I hope you can see what I do, that our schools aren't safe and it's taking a toll on us, the people who are most connected to them. Our neighborhood has worked hard to hold each other up, but it's time for our legislature to crystallize the structure so that regular caring citizens have legal pathways to hold ICE, a rogue government agency that routinely flouts our laws, accountable. Democracy, a huge number of neighbors working together to protect children, is what has created the pressure to change the narrative on ICE across the nation. And it is your job as the legislature to create laws and expand and solidify our protections as individual citizens who stand up for the legal rights and institutions of our state. Please create a law that not only keeps our schools safe, but also allows anyone, citizen or immigrant, to take legal recompense against any government agency that seeks to create terror near the schools we call home.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have Christopher Dundas on our list, followed by David Aaron.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Christoph Dundas. I'm a band teacher in one of Minnesota's more diverse rural school districts. My goal today is to share with you the mood among families and teachers in greater Minnesota. I hope that your discussion can focus on your constituents and Minnesota residents without regard to national partisan politics. The school where I teach has more than 45 home languages spoken by students. Our school population includes nearly equal amounts of white and Hispanic and Latino students, each about 37% of the school population, with the remaining 25% of students representing widely diverse races and cultures. Our students represent the world as they build their lives as Americans. It's no secret that many students are not attending in-person school in Minnesota out of fear for their safety. While I don't have a number from my own district, it is apparent in hallways, lunchrooms, and classrooms that there are significantly fewer students in the building. ICE agents have been seen regularly in my city, first appearing after major news events in Minneapolis and continuing to increase any time that their leaders say that they are backing off or pulling out of the Twin Cities. Last week, a student arrived a couple of minutes late for a band lesson, and as we started, the student said, "Sorry, I was late. Two students I know were arrested by ICE this morning, and my mom called me between classes to make sure it wasn't me." The student went on to describe that they do not yet have a driver's license, and their mom took them to get a passport and continues to remind the student to carry it for identification. I later found out that the students picked up by ICE last week are U.S. citizens with no criminal record. They were picked up for no reason other than the way that they look and the language that they were speaking outside. It is no wonder that parents and community members have been telling me that they are afraid to have their students go to school. Parents continue to say that they want their children in school, but they are afraid of what will happen when students walk to or from school or in the minutes when parents are waiting to pick them up. Recently, the Trump administration withdrew the protections that keep ICE out of schools, churches, and healthcare facilities. This adds fuel to the fear in our communities and state as school officials grapple individually with the what-ifs of potential ICE agents arriving at school buildings. We have seen agents parked outside of schools, waiting to grab students or parents in front of classes of children. I hope that we can agree that this goes against everything that our state believes about education, that schools should be accessible to all students.
Thank you, Mr. Dundas. If you could move to your conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next is David Aaron. Mr. Aaron will be followed by Tammy Knapper.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Aaron, and I'm the General Counsel of Education Minnesota, and I'm speaking in support of House File 3435. This bill is needed because the actions of federal immigration agents in Minnesota schools and bus stops over the last 2 months have inflicted tremendous harm on teaching and learning throughout our state. For over 30 years, Republican and Democratic administrations, DHS had followed the sensitive locations policy, which prohibited immigration enforcement at or near schools, colleges, places of worship, and healthcare facilities, except in cases of public safety emergency. 5 days after taking office, the current administration rescinded this policy without explanation. The rescission of this policy has been catastrophic for schools throughout the country, but nowhere more so than in Minnesota. It has led to the patrolling of schools and bus stops by armed, masked, and poorly trained immigration agents who have used parking lots as staging grounds, pepper sprayed high school students at dismissal time, used 5-year-olds as bait to arrest their children and question minor students about their immigration status on school grounds for no reason other than the color of their skin. These actions have shattered the sense of safety all students deserve to feel at school. House File 3435 requires public schools and charter schools to limit access to their facilities to federal immigration officials unless they follow basic requirements that most state and local law enforcement agencies already follow, including presenting identification, having a valid judicial warrant, and receiving approval from the superintendent. Many schools already have these requirements for ICE and Border Patrol agents, but some of our members have been frustrated by the lack of clear policies and guidelines from their districts about what they can and cannot do if ICE comes to their schools. These bills provide needed clarity for educators and families. Many educators have been putting on a brave face for their students despite terrifying events taking place just outside their school walls. Under that exterior, they are fearful, traumatized, and exhausted. We thank Representative Jordan and others involved in this legislation as part of the effort to make our schools safe for all students.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. Up next, we have Tammy Napper, who's joining us remotely. And Ms. Napper,
hello,
just a reminder to keep your remarks to 2 minutes, please.
Hello, committee members. My name is Tammy Knapper, and I'm a special education coordinator, local union president, and Education Minnesota governing board member. I want to bring you to a small school district in greater Minnesota, Willmar, where fear has been quietly reshaping daily life. We serve about 4,000 students. On a typical day, around 250 are absent. That's normal. But in mid-January, when ICE activity increased in our region, normal disappeared. In 1 week, absences just didn't rise, they exploded. 790 students gone, then 1,214, over 1,000 kids missing school on a single day. The next week, numbers stayed high, not because of weather or illness, but because families were afraid to leave their homes. Afraid a parent might not be there when a child got off the bus, afraid a routine traffic stop could separate a family, afraid that even lawfully present neighbors could be questioned or detained. We heard it from parents directly, asking in whispers if school was still safe. One of our 19-year-old students was taken into custody on January 12th. Her family didn't know where she was for days. When she was finally released 5 days later, the damage had been done. Classmates noticed, teachers noticed. Public education runs on trust. When families don't feel safe sending their children through our doors, learning stops. Trauma walks into our classrooms before the first bell rings. This isn't abstract. This is attendance sheets, empty desks, children carrying adult-sized fear into classrooms that are supposed to be built for hope. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mrs. Knapper. Up next, we have Victoria Martinson, and Victoria will be followed by Jasmine Clark.
Good afternoon, House Committee. My name is Victoria Martinson. I live in Northeast Minneapolis, and I'm Restorative Practices Coordinator for Global Arts Plus Upper Campus in St. Paul Public Schools. As someone who is in the school building and student facing, I have seen firsthand the disruption and harm that Operation Metro Surge has created in our school community. When I enter the school each day, my role is not to teach a content area such as science or history. Instead, I work hard with our students and staff to intentionally create a community we are all proud to be a part of. A community value that we have intentionally centered this school year is belonging. In middle school education, fostering a sense of belonging is not only pivotal to student educational success and well-being, it is directly linked to equity. Belonging ensures that every member of the community, regardless of their background, has access to the same education, support, and opportunities. Operation Metro Surge and ICE presence have directly impacted that sense of belonging we've worked so hard to create. When students and staff are being told by our federal government that they do not belong in the state of Minnesota because of how they look or the languages they speak, each community they are a part of is severed. Belonging means being able to show up to your community spaces without fear, and ICE has taken that sense of safety away from our students and community. Because of the fear of deportation or violence from ICE and federal entities, over one-fourth of our students have moved to online learning, with the majority of those students being part of our Language Academy program. When one-fourth of a community is gone, it not only harms those who are excluded, it's detrimental to everyone. The fear created by the ICE occupation is an all-encompassing emotion for our community. There are daily conversations about classmate safety, where family members may end up, if guardians feel safe enough to leave their homes for groceries, or if they'll ever come back to school again. We are hearing from the federal government that ICE is targeting adults, but what they are failing to realize is that many of these adults have children who are deeply impacted. We have students who exhibit extreme mental health concerns, such as depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideation, because they do not know where their family members are, if they are safe walking in their neighborhood, or if they'll be entering a raided home when they get off the bus. The stress from students is warranted because their fear is real. Abductions and deportations are happening, and it is destroying the sense of belonging and dignity people deserve. As you continue in these sessions and create legislation to protect Minnesotans, I urge you to think of our young people and the sense of community we have the obligation to complete for them.
Move to your conclusion. Thank you. Up next, we have Jasmine Clark. And following Ms. Clark is Hyle Scully. Are either of them present here? Thank you, Ms. Scully. If you could just state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is Lee Scully. I'm an English language teacher at St. Paul Public Schools and a proud member of the St. Paul Federation of Educators. At Frost Lake Elementary, we're a language academy that houses more than 500 students, with 59% are ELLs and 82% are eligible for free and reduced lunch. We have over 100 staff who are working hard in holding our community together during Operation Surge. We have shifted over 200 students into virtual learning and helped families access food, resources, and support. Our community is doing everything it can to create a sense of security, but we cannot out-organize fear. Recently, a student tugged a volunteer safety vest and said with a big smile, "Hey, I know you." That precious moment matters, as it reminds us that children are constantly scanning for who is safe, and right now too many of them are unsure. I teach 8-year-olds who carry worries no child should. One told me her father had been taken by ICE and how much she misses his warmth. Another brings her birth certificate to school in case she is questioned. Imagine trying to learn to read while wondering if your family will be there at the end of the day. Schools should be places of safety and belonging. Instead, many of our BIPOC students and educators, including myself, walk through our doors grieving, anxious, and afraid. Yet, as I have learned from our ancestors, is that we will fight for a better world that is possible, and that the truth gives me strength, even if that means I won't be here to see the fruition of it. Legislators, these are our children with a dream and a whole life ahead of them. If we want strong schools and stable communities, we must choose policies that protect children's safety, dignity, and the right to learn. I urge you to lead with courage and humanity, because our students are watching and they deserve to know that the adults in power will keep them safe. You will continue to hear these countless stories, but the story of us all begins when we recognize our shared responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scully. Up next, we have Lucia Cook. Ms. Cook will be followed by Emily Uecker. And as you get settled, if you could state your name for the record. Thank you.
Lucia Cook. All right. Good afternoon, House Committee. My name is Lucia Cook, and I'm a teacher for the blind and visually impaired with St. Paul Public Schools. I've been in special education for 18 years, and this has been by far the darkest, hardest year of teaching that I've encountered. I'm also a mother. I'm a proud Guatemalan American, and I am the daughter of an immigrant myself. I come to you guys today just exhausted. Exhausted, but also with purpose. And that purpose is really that we need to stand right now with vigilance and courage and fortitude for our students. And I need you all to know that our kids are not okay. As a direct result of federal law enforcement activity in our communities, we are experiencing an unprecedented levels of family separations. And these family separations, they're brutal, they're unexpected, and temporary or permanent, they all have long-term repercussions that really just bring me to tears. I don't have much time today, but here are some of the many stories of family separations that I'm carrying in my heart. The other day, I got a call from a fellow special ed teacher. Her 14-year-old student with autism had been called down to the front office to be informed that his mother would not be picking him up that day. She had been abducted, surrounded by ICE agents that jumped out of four different vehicles on her way back from buying bread across the street from their apartment. A family separation. This mom reported that while she was detained, she befriended a breastfeeding mother who had also been detained and who had been separated from her newborn. She was forced to hand express into a cup. Another family separation. On a home visit the other day, I was there as a family with legal status. I was going to go in and notarize some paperwork for them. Lots of people have been completing DOPAs, if you've heard of that. And that mother I found in a nearly catatonic state of shock, alone with her toddler. Her husband had gone in for one of his routine ICE checks and had never come back. We searched the ICE locator system, and he had been detained. His location was not shown. Another separation. I know I need to stop now, but I just want to say that the least we can do right now, the least we can do is pass H.F. 3435. Our families need to be safe. They need to know our schools are safe. And the least we can do is say ICE doesn't get to mess with their schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. Up next, we have Emily Euker. Is Ms. Euker present? Wonderful. On deck, we have Carrie Donlan. And Ms. Euker, if you could state your name for the record. Thank you.
Sure. Members of the committee, my name is Emily Euker. This is my fifth year as a school social worker and 12th year working in children and youth programming. I proudly work at Bruce Vento Elementary, less than 2 miles from here where the late congressman called home on the east side of St. Paul. Things were really starting to look up this year. Our daily attendance was finally starting to make a significant recovery since COVID. Our kids are receiving free breakfast and lunch daily. And as a social worker, I get to work on a robust team of student support personnel thanks to the funding passed by legislature in 2023. We started hearing whispers of families affected by ICE in October. By December, attendance plummeted. Kids wondered where their classmates were. I worried which kids would disappear over winter break. By January, we had more students become afraid. Now, a Dakota girl carries her birth certificate back and forth to school in a Ziploc bag. A Karen student who spotted ICE near his home runs the block and a half to school as fast as he can. Hmong staff and students carry their passports. An African American family who became homeless this year stopped sending their children to school because they are afraid the Somali van driver will get pulled over with their kids in the car. The overall anxiety and fear amongst these children is indescribable. When we announced a temporary virtual option, one-third of our students went online. Despite the drawdown, we will not be out of this until every single child is back at school feeling safe. This occupation has resulted in a collective trauma greater than what we saw during 2020. Children of those who fled war are right back in at what at times is indistinguishable for a war zone. I say that not to assume intention of agents, but seeing so many armed agents throughout the community is indistinguishable to the nervous system from a war in a faraway country. On top of all of this, I fear that despite our mental health needs, services are going to get slashed when our students need us most. We deserve to have schools where children do not need to fear ICE. We deserve schools with robust mental health supports. Our children deserve to recover from this and learn without fear. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Euker. Up next, we will hear from Carrie Donlan, followed by Adela Hogan.
Hello.
State your name for the
record. My name is Carrie Donlan. I am an English language teacher in St. Paul. I've been teaching here for 11 years, but I've been a teacher for 23 years. I'm speaking today on behalf of my department and our English language learner students. Our students are generally immigrants themselves or the children of immigrants. In my school, they come from a variety of countries. Political instability has been the very reason many of their families sought refuge in this country. Through refugee resettlement, their families have followed the legal processes. These systems are very difficult to navigate and often mean years of living in refugee camps while they wait their turn and they've been vetted by the U.S. government. Tragically, this documentation has not offered them any stronger sense of safety during ICE occupation. Several students have been sheltering at home for months now. Others who have never worked or held jobs in this country before are now seeking out employment opportunities to help their parents meet the bills. This is yet another adult burden that they've had to take on. A student told me about reported to me that masked men were knocking on doors in their apartment building. They were waiting outside their apartment. Other families have received threatening notes. One note said, "We know who you are and we know where you're where you live." This was left on a car. This type of terror is exactly what families sought to escape. Our refugee students have told us they are terrified of being taken. They're afraid of what could be done to them if they're approached by masked men in plain clothes. They ask, what should they say? What does it even matter? They're scared for their friends. They're scared for their families. They're terrified of coming home to missing parents. Will their parents be there at the end of the day when they come home? And if they're not, what will they do? It is impossible to answer these questions to our students with any measure of security. And I just want to mention that my mom is an immigrant. She's been naturalized for over 50 years, and she was sheltering at home. I just want to mention this because that trauma lives in a person for their lifetime. And I'm very worried about these children and their families being exposed to this trauma. We have to meet safety for them. It is our job as Minnesotans, it is our job as schools.
Thank you, Ms. Dyer.
Thank you.
Next, we have Adela Holguin, followed by Anthony Jensen. And please state your name for the record.
My name is Adela Holguin. I'm a family liaison at American Indian Magnet School on St. Paul's East Side. My job is to help families feel welcome, connected, and supported. For the first time since the COVID pandemic, nearly every family attended fall conferences. Even in December, despite the ongoing presence of federal agents in the Twin Cities, we had a record number of families attend our Plains Culture Fair. However, in January, after winter break, the energy in our building shifted. We began canceling events. Attendance steadily declined. At one point, we had 85 students absent. Students no longer felt safe. My conversations with families changed too. Instead of talking about school activities, we began discussing tribal IDs, DOPA forms, grocery drop-offs, and plans for virtual learning. During one of these calls, a mother shared with me that she tells her children that the bravest thing that they can do is to go to school and learn as much as possible, because tomorrow it could all be taken away from them. Over the past 2 months, I've witnessed the profound impact these events have had on our students. A 7-year-old who breaks down in tears and asks why this is happening, an 11-year-old who wishes they can simply come to school without fear, a 5-year-old who tells their classmates that Native people are not safe, an 8-year-old who keeps their passport tucked inside their backpack just in case, and a 13-year-old who worries that their friends will forget about them. Our children only get one childhood. The trauma they are experiencing now will forever be a part of their story. Like all parents, our families want their children to be safe, happy, and able to learn. When you enter our building, one of the first things you see is a quote from Sitting Bull displayed on the wall. Let us put our minds together and see what life we can make for our children. Students cannot learn when they are afraid. Our families cannot engage when they are worried about being separated. Schools must remain places of safety, stability, and hope. Please help ensure we are creating a future defined not by fear, but by dignity and opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holguin. Up next, we have Anthony Jensen. He'll be followed by Dr. Amy Hewitt Olatunde.
Hello. My name is Anthony Jensen. I'm a resident of St. Paul, and I have been an English language teacher at American Indian Magnet School, Ames for short, on St. Paul's East Side for the past 5 years. The school year started off well for us at Ames. By October and November, the initial excitement of early fall had turned into the rhythm of classroom routines. This changed in December. Early that month, I started to hear students asking their friends in quiet, concerned voices about ICE and if their families were safe. We stress to students that their safety is always our top priority, but how can you honestly promise safety to a student when their families are risking their freedom every time they go to work or drop their child off at school? You cannot. I am left thinking about a conversation I had with one of my students this past spring. He asked about ICE and if his dad was safe. What could I say? His dad is his world. To this 10-year-old, there was nothing better than spending a Saturday spent hanging with dad at a job site. In mid-January, at one of these job sites, federal agents took his father. He is gone. This family has been torn apart, and for what? When temporary virtual learning was offered to students in St. Paul Public Schools, about a quarter of our families at Ames took this option. And while virtual learning offers a way for students to stay connected to their school, the time away has taken its toll. Here's an example of one Ames family's story. The younger brother's a true artist. When his family decided to switch to virtual learning, I made sure to drop off art supplies at his house. Last week during a virtual class, I asked him if he could share with us some of the art he's been working on. He showed a beautiful mountain scene with a meadow and a stream. But you know, he said while holding up the painting, I actually haven't been outside for many weeks. His older brother loves sports and he was excited for the upcoming basketball season. And yet when it began in late January, he was not in our starting five, nor was he on the bench. Said he was at home, the blinds drawn. The closest he can get to the court is through some text messages from his friends. These are kids who want to do kid things and should be able to do kid things. In this moment of separation, fear, and pain, our community has come together to support these kids and each other. Regular, ordinary people stepping up. It's now time for you as our elected officials to do the same. Our kids need and deserve so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Up next, we have Dr. Hewitt Olatunde, followed by Flannery Clark.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want you to imagine a senior, 12th grader. She's a gifted student full of life, full of love, full of compassion for everyone around her. Her dream is to be an ESL teacher. She should be enjoying this final season of her high school career and anticipating graduation. For the past 2 months, she's been trapped in her home, unable to leave, her joy gone, her freedom stolen, and she is one of the countless other youth who's been a victim of this occupation. My name is Dr. Hewitt Olatunde. I have taught St. Paul Public Schools for the past 30 years. I'm also the former interim chair and vice chair of Pelsby, and I work at four metro universities around the city. I'm a proud educator of immigrant and refugee students. And as educators, we see the impact of ICE activity as each bell rings throughout the day. We see it in the empty desks. Our district has seen almost 7,000 students at its peak not come to school, 832 of those with IEPs, who need the academic and emotional supports that we as educators provide. Parents are terrified to drive their own children to school, fearing that a random checkpoint or being profiled simply because of the color of their skin will mean that they will never see their child again, or at the very least be drilled for ID and possibly detained and sent to the Whipple building. We see it in behavioral shifts. I have students, bright, ambitious, amazing 6th through 12th graders, who have suddenly stopped turning in work. And when I pull them aside, they don't talk about the things that kids should be talking about. They are living in a state of toxic stress. When ICE looms over our community, the school stops being a place of learning and becomes a triage center. We spend our prep periods helping students learn virtually, organize grocery runs, contact students who are sheltered in place, among other things. We are watching a generation of St. Paul children and children across this country lose their childhoods to a fear that no child should know. We ask our students to show up every day and to try their best, and it's time for us to show up for them. We must ensure that our schools remain absolute sanctuaries, free from the shadow of deportation, so that liberty and justice for all is maintained and held. It is a reality that they experience. What is happening in the city, state, and country is teaching our children that they are not safe, they're not heard, they're not equal to. This needs to change now. Thank you. Tuxkaldaha, Dablu Dama, Wachau, Gracias, Mahat Sneed, Merci beaucoup, Miigwech.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Hewitt Olatunde. Up next, we have Flannery Clark. Ms. Clark will be followed by Samia.
Hello. Today is day 79 of the ICE occupation of Minnesota. I'm Flannery Clark. I'm the proud parent of a second grader in Minneapolis Public Schools and a volunteer with Minneapolis Families for Public Schools. Almost every day since ICE came to town, I've been standing outside my child's school at drop-off, pickup, or both to protect elementary school students from ICE. Additionally, I receive reports from around the city from when ICE is present on school campuses. Hours after our neighbor Renee Good was murdered, I was alerted to a large number of ICE vehicles staging outside an elementary school on the south side. The school was on lockdown for hours. Later that same day, I was at Roosevelt High School when Greg Bovino and more than a dozen heavily armed Border Patrol agents deployed chemical weapons on our students and arrested educators protecting their students during dismissal. I was tear gassed that day, and when it was all over, I was crying on the ground with another parent, not because of the chemicals in my eyes, because I was so deeply scared for the physical and emotional safety of our children. 2 weeks ago, school patrol at a local elementary school dismissal observed ICE agents chasing someone down the street with guns drawn in front of terrified children and their families. My own child's school has repeatedly been forced into lockdown by ICE presence on the edge of campus and was unable to have outdoor recess for 6 weeks due to the constant threat of ICE agents on the edge of campus. Kids need access to the outdoors and exercise. My kid loves winter. He looks forward every year to spending time on the playground building snow forts. So many families are experiencing the violence and terror of ICE so much worse than mine, but I just wish my kid could have played on the playground with his friends. My experiences are not unique. In fact, they're the norm. Over the last 10 plus weeks across the Twin Cities Metro and beyond, caregivers and educators have organized to keep our kids safe. Guarding bus stops, giving rides to school, standing watch on playgrounds. Our schools should be off limits. They're a place for sanctuary and learning and growth, not a place where children fear for their safety from heavily armed federal agents on school property. Our children are the future. They deserve the assurance that ICE agents are not on or adjacent to their schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Up next, we have Samia, followed by Chris Stenson.
Hello, everybody. My name is Samia, and I'm here not only as a senior, but as a student representative on our school board. I am here because I'm asking you to tap into your humanity and make it so that schools are safe for kids of color and everyone who is affected by ICE. I want to relay a quote to you from our president. Dirty, disgusting, ridden with crime. The only thing they know how to go after is ships. That's exactly what he said about my ethnicity and my community here in Minnesota and all across the United States. This same rhetoric has been repeated about different groups of people all across the United States. And with Operation Metro Surge, where 3,000 federal agents were deployed into the Twin Cities and the surrounding area, has been devastating not only for the entirety of our community, but especially for students. My high school has seen a record number of students who have basically chosen online school because they feel safer. I have seen my own classmates fear for their lives because they are scared that they will be taken away at dismissal. I have seen examples all across Minnesota, Roosevelt High School, where students were violently attacked by ICE agents, and it affected our community so greatly because everything in our mind leads up to one thing. What if I'm next? I want to relay another personal experience for you. After my first encounter with ICE agents at my local grocery store, I went home crying to my mom, asking her to give me my passport. And now I have to carry it around because I don't look like the Trump administration's typical American. And that is the same story for many students all across here in Minnesota. You guys were elected here to serve and protect your constituents. This is not an issue of red versus blue or political polarization. This is an issue of protecting our students and making sure they are safe at school. I am asking you to vote yes on this file.
Thank you, Samia. Up next, we will hear from Chris Stenson, followed by Emily.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Chris Stinson. I'm the Policy Director for SEIU Local 284. We represent more than 10,000 school workers, including paraeducators, food service workers, custodians, bus drivers, and higher ed faculty throughout the state. Our food service members fought hard with some folks in this room to win universal breakfast and lunch because they know which kids don't get enough to eat at home. And they want every kid, regardless of what their parents do, to have the nourishment to grow, learn, and thrive. And it breaks my heart that many of the kids who rely on school breakfast and lunch are not safe attending school right now. We've had bus drivers who had to hold kids on the bus because ICE was raiding their apartment building and it wasn't safe to let them off to go home. We represent EL paras in Ricori who say that only half the students have been showing up to school fearing for their safety. You know, we hear similar stories from across the state, and the damage the federal government has inflicted on Minnesota's students is not limited to the Metro, even though it was called Metro Surge. Many of our members of color have been followed by ICE, including one custodian where agents tried to follow him into the loading dock of the school. We don't ask our members about their immigration status, but let me be clear, school district employees are authorized to be in and work in the United States. SEIU represents one member who was detained while getting groceries. She'd only been going to work, home, and the grocery store for weeks. She was quickly sent from Minnesota to the camps in Texas, and while she was in the camps, she missed the birth of her granddaughter. Her family was counting on her to help with the new baby. Attorneys with SEIU helped her file a habeas petition, and when a judge finally reviewed it, she was released. The judge said she'd been unlawfully detained. The disruption to her family, the disruption to her school community, the fear, the deprivation, the time she's never going to get back, all of it was unlawful. The damage to our state, our kids, our schools, our dedicated staff is incalculable. And until recently, this stuff was out of bounds. Immigration enforcement was not allowed on school property, and we should go back to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stinson. Up next, we have Emily on our list, followed by Ms. Alfonso. Is Emily here? And when you're settled, please state your name for the record.
Hello, committee. My name is Emily, and I'm a first-generation American and a student. And Minnesota is my home. In my school, I am a part of the Leaders in Education and Diversity Club that celebrates other people's cultures. This creates a safe space for students to feel represented in the community. However, our club activities have changed lately. We have spent time putting together food boxes for families in our community who have felt isolated in fear of coming outside. My classmates should not have to worry about coming to school. I want to share an experience that happened to me yesterday on my way from home from school. I was in a car when we were stopped by immigration agents. There were multiple vehicles, and it was a very stressful situation. I wasn't afraid for myself as much as I was afraid for someone else in the car. I kept thinking about how life-changing it would be if something were to happen to this person. In moments like that, you try to stay calm because you don't want anything to escalate. But the fear is real. After the interaction, it took us a long time to feel settled enough to leave the area. I remember feeling shaken and unsure about what had just happened. Experiences like that affect young people and how they move throughout the world. You start thinking about what areas to avoid, what routes to feel safe, and how easily a normal day can turn into something frightening. And what worries me most is the idea of something like this happening at school. Schools are supposed to be the places where students feel safe, where we focus on learning, friendships, and our own future. The enforcement actions that continue to happen near or at schools are causing fear and disruption for students like me. I've seen how these fears affect families too. When enforcement activity increased and ICE agents terrorized my community, all routines changed, even the most simple. Family members became afraid of ordinary things like walking children to the bus stop. I remember hearing about a young child who asked for a whistle because she's worried about what could happen to her parents. And that stays with kids. I respectfully ask you to please support this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Emily. Up next, we have Ms. Alfonso. Is she present?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
If you could state your name for the record, please.
Surisaday Lopez Alfonso. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Surisaday Lopez Alfonso, and I am a community defense legal assistant with the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. ILCM is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that provides free immigration legal services to low-income immigrants and refugees across Minnesota and North Dakota. ILCM respectfully submits this testimony regarding the critical issue of limiting the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, access to our schools. Immigration enforcement actions at or near schools undermine the fundamental purpose of these spaces, which must remain dedicated solely to education, safety, and child development. No family should fear sending their child to school. As a legal assistant at ILCM, I work directly with impacted families and community members through our detention line hotline. I have heard firsthand accounts of immigration enforcement activity near school grounds and, in some cases, detention of children. These experiences illustrate the urgent need for clear and consistent protections for educational spaces. When children and families do not feel safe near schools, three critical concerns arise. One, schools cease to be safe and trustworthy spaces. The presence of immigration enforcement near schools creates immediate fear among students and families, including U.S. citizen children in mixed status households. Fear disrupts attendance, academic performance, and the students' well-being. A child who's worried about family separation cannot fully engage in learning. Two, schools are forced to bear the burden of federal immigration policy. Educators are trained to teach, mentor, and support students. Educators are not hired to interpret or facilitate federal immigration enforcement. Without clear limitations, school administrators and staff may be placed in legally and ethically complex situations that distract from their core educational mission. Three, unclear public safety boundaries create instability. Limiting DHS access to schools does not prevent law enforcement from responding to legitimate threats or conducting criminal investigations where necessary. Rather, it establishes clear boundaries that protect students, teachers, parents, and the broader public. Clear standards strengthen the public safety by rebuilding trust between families and institutions. Limiting DHS access to schools is about protecting children.
Ms. Alfonso, if you could move to the conclusion, please.
Yes, and maintaining trust in public institutions, schools must remain safe spaces where all students, regardless of immigration backgrounds, can learn without fear. Thank you.
Thank you. We have two speakers remaining on our list, Mr. John Fanning, followed by John Boehner.
Hello, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm John Fanning, director of the Education Partnerships Coalition of Minnesota, or EPC, speaking in support of House File 3435. EPC is a bipartisan coalition of 9 cradle-to-career partnerships across Minnesota. Our collective impact model engages more than 600 partner organizations and supports more than 300,000 young Minnesotans and their families. EPC communities are in greater Minnesota, as well as in metro and urban parts of our great state. We take our bipartisan stance very seriously, coming together across communities, red and purple and blue, in support of Minnesotans, young Minnesotans and their families. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement was formed under the Bush administration. In the years that followed under Presidents Obama, Trump in his first term, and Biden, schools were designated as sensitive locations, limiting access for ICE actions. The reason is obvious: to avoid traumatizing innocent children, as you've heard today. The current Trump administration, as you know, through a January 25 directive, ended sensitive designation for schools. The consequences are predictable, and we've heard so many examples today. We are asking you to communicate to the federal administration that we want this designation restored and to provide guidelines and guardrails in Minnesota that both abide by federal law and maximize protection for our young people. They are our future, and we need to ensure them a safe, uninterrupted learning environment. It's a both and, it's a win-win, and we ask for your bipartisan support. Co-chairs and esteemed committee members, thank you for your kind consideration of my testimony today on behalf of our 9 member organizations, our 600 partner organizations, and 300,000 young Minnesotans and their families.
Thank you, Mr. Fanning. Up next, we have John Boehner. If you could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is John Boehner. I'm the policy counsel at the ACLU of Minnesota, testifying today in support of HF 3435 as amended. This bill returns us to a policy that was in place for roughly 20 years, prohibiting immigration enforcement at schools except where law enforcement has a warrant or exigent circumstances. In 2007, the George W. Bush administration issued a memo to ICE restricting immigration at or near schools, other institutions of education, and venues where children and their families may be present. Presidents Obama, Trump, and Biden continued or expanded this policy, only for President Trump to revoke it on the first day of his second term. As prior DHS officials noted, DHS can accomplish its enforcement mission without denying or limiting individuals' access to needed medical care, children access to their schools, the displaced access to food and shelter, and people of faith access to their places of worship and more. Laws protecting sensitive locations have existed in other states for nearly a decade. When a similar bill was challenged in California, the court upheld the state's restrictions on its employees. Citing Supreme Court precedent, the Ninth Circuit noted that a state does not discriminate against the federal government and those with whom it deals unless it treats someone else better than it treats them. The California law does not treat the federal government worse than anyone else. Indeed, it does not regulate federal operations at all. Similarly, this bill does not regulate federal activity. It governs the activities of school district and charter schools employees. The only restrictions in this bill are placed upon the actions of school district and charter schools employees, and it provides those employees the clarity on what to do if immigration shows up at their schools. Do they have a warrant? Then they can have access. Do they have a judicial warrant? Then they can have access. Do they not? No, you are right to deny them access. That clarity is necessary for our schools to understand how they're operating in this context with ICE and DHS roaming the streets. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beeler. At this time, I'd like to move on to some discussion, but I want to stop and thank all the testifiers who shared their experiences and perspectives here today. We recognize that this is a deeply personal and emotional issue for many Minnesotans, and we appreciate the courage it takes to come forward and participate in our process. Thank you. At this time, Co-Chair Bennett, do you have a DE amendment you'd like to offer?
I do, Mr. Chair, if I could offer the DE amendment, DE2.
Wonderful. So moved.
Okay. Would you like me to explain it?
Please do.
All right. Thank you. Excuse me. Members, this amendment would allow the General Counsel at the Minnesota Department of Education to work with the Minnesota Attorney General to draft guidance to help inform school officials of both their rights and responsibilities in any situation involving law enforcement, including immigration enforcement activities. We heard from one of the testifiers from one of our schools, I believe, that they are lacking clear policy and guidelines for schools. That's what schools want. So this, the bill as amended, the underlying bill here as amended, makes significant improvements in the original language, but it still imposes a sweeping mandate that lacks flexibility to account for a number of individual situations, and it could literally put school staff at risk of their own legal liabilities, either with law enforcement or the school community they serve, if they get it wrong. So from my discussions with school leaders, many schools already have protocols in place for this. We heard that with some of the school leaders who were up here just a little bit ago. I talked with Representative Bakeberg, who's a school principal. He said they have clear policies in their schools. We want schools to have their own policies, the ones that work best for them, and they can do that right now. So I guess what we want to see here is that guidance, we need guidance on what is expected when these situations occur and recognition that no two situations are going to be the same. So I would like to offer this amendment as a way to offer clear policy and guidelines for our schools.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bennett. Do we have any discussion to the DE2? Representative Green.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hill. I appreciate the question. I would love to get feedback from the our Department of Education in Minnesota to really understand what this amendment does in their perspective. So do we have someone here from? Thank you.
Welcome, and if you could state your name for the record before you begin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. So to the amendment from Chair Bennett, so generally the department doesn't provide legal advice to other entities, and this proposal would fall directly within that. This is actually a role that the Attorney General already has. The Attorney General has put out guidance last February, I believe, guidance that we have put out in multiple resource messages to school leaders around schools' rights and responsibilities in this current context. What we do provide from the department is guidance on fostering inclusive and welcoming environments, and we also amplify guidance that Attorney General may put out or other resources that schools can use. And there's also statutes that already cover this. I believe it's 128.10 and 808.07 that establish the Attorney General's authority in this space already.
Representative Green.
Yep, thank you. That is helpful.
Any further discussion, members? Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Co-Chair Bennett, for the amendment. I would ask members to oppose the Bennett amendment. I would also point to members to look at written testimony within your packets. There is asks from school districts, and as we heard from other school districts, what they're looking for is the structure that prevents ICE agents and DHS agents from entering school grounds, not necessarily guidance. Guidance is not structure, so this amendment, while thoughtful, is not what our schools need right now to keep them safe. So I ask for members to vote no.
Co-Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. Before I forget, I'd like to ask for a roll call before I close.
Thank you, okay. Co-Chair.
Thank you. So I would just like to clarify that when this amendment directs the general counsel at MDE to work with the Minnesota Attorney General to draft guidance, so we wouldn't expect MDE to add that guidance below. And again, one size fits all rarely works, so I think this amendment clearly states that schools need guidelines, they need policy, and then let them act as appropriate for their area. So thank you very much for hearing this.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bennett. A roll call has been called for. Ms. Keller, if you could call the roll.
Co-Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Co-Chair Bennett, yes. Co-Chair Jordan.
Jordan, no.
Co-Chair Jordan, no. Co-Vice President, Co-VP Josiah Hill.
Hill, no.
Hill, no. Co-VP Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Mueller, yes. Bierman?
Bierman, no.
DePell?
Yes.
DePell, yes. Falconer?
Falconer, no.
Falconer, no. Fogelman?
Fogelman, yes.
Fogelman, yes. Gordon?
Gordon, yes.
Gordon, yes. Gottfried?
Gottfried, no.
Gottfried, no. Green?
Green, no.
Green, no. Keeler?
Keeler, no.
Keeler, no. Lawrence?
Lawrence, yes.
Lawrence, yes. And Roach?
Roach, yes.
Seven.
We have 7 ayes and 7 no votes. The DE2 amendment is not adopted. We'll go back to further discussion on the bill as amended by the DE1. Any further discussion? Representative Gottfried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very, very glad that Co-Chair Bennett brought up the federal context of this at the very beginning, about years of federal neglect on this immigration issue. But I would like, it would be remiss of me to not remind everybody that in 2024 that there was a bipartisan bill queued up at the federal level to address these very issues that we're facing right now. And it was killed by federal Republicans so that our current president had a pretext to run his campaign. And we are seeing the results of them killing that bill right now in our communities and in our state. So in my area, Roseville Area Schools, kids are scared. We've heard that from all the testifiers. Rumors of ICE in school have led to a poor learning environment. They have led to kids at home. We have an adult education center that is run by the school district called Anpetu Techa that has been stalked by ICE almost every day as they wait to snag up Spanish immersion teachers for both students, like children and adults. And then everything that the testifiers claim today also are run true in my district. And, you know, as we discuss this bill on ICE in public schools, we have, frankly, I have to highlight the lies that the DHS and feds have propagated with about our state. They lied about why they came. They lied about their tactics. They lied about their targeting. They lied about Renee Good. They lied about Alex Preti. They lied about Julio Sosa Celis, who they claimed hit them and beat them with the shovel, which was just found out to be a lie.
and they have certainly lied about not targeting schools. If they're not targeting schools, why do I continue to get texts about them following school buses? Why do I continue to get texts about them camping in the Roseville Area High School parking lot, waiting for an opportunity to strike to abduct somebody? Why do I hear them about them camping in the middle school parking lot to do the same, and the lots of elementary schools throughout the districts that I represent? Why? And if this is about public safety, why is everybody terrified? Why? This bill is necessary to protect kids and stabilize our learning environments. And I just want to make it very clear what a vote on this bill is. A vote yes is supporting kids, their families, and our educators. That's what it is. Voting no is cowering to a leader who is actively hurting our communities, those children, those families, those educators, and endorsing their lies. And so I encourage all our members, please vote yes. Vote yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion? Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. And most of all, I want to say thank you to our educators and our very brave students. I was an educator before I came here, a Check and Connect coordinator, an Indian Education liaison, a substitute outreach coordinator, and I can tell you some of the fiercest protectors are our teachers and our educators. And you have not let us down. The way that you continue to stand up and protect our next generation, I think, is noble and extremely brave. Coming here today to speak so clearly about what is happening is important. I have spent a lot of time in education working around attendance. We heard during the pandemic how hard it was on our students to go to virtual learning. That's the thing that you all talked about. You talked about how awful that was for our education systems and how hard that is for us to catch up. And what we've heard today is, out of fear, our kids have had to choose to move to online learning, not because of choice, but because of fear. I also deeply believe and have worked for decades on family preservation. And as an Indigenous person, I can tell you I know what generational trauma feels like when this government rips families apart by going after our children. Now, I think we all agree, we do not want criminals here. I've also been working very hard on safe harbor, sex trafficking victims. Those are criminals that I do not want anywhere in our state or near our children. Mental health is something that we are going to have to invest in. Not just at this table, but at every table. What is going on here is going to have a ripple effect for generations that we don't even know. And the thing that I've been telling a lot of people lately is, this is a moment in history that generations who are not born yet are going to ask, what did you do? What did you do when you had an opportunity to stand up for what is right? When you had an opportunity to protect your kids in the schools, what did you do? And I think today, on this vote, you will be able to prove to your future generations that you don't know what you did today. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Falconer.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill forward. I too agree this is incredibly, incredibly necessary, and I wish it wasn't so. To say that they're not targeting schools, I agree with Representative Gottfried, is an outright lie. In my district with Eden Prairie and Minnetonka, every single day, ICE agents are stalking school buses and intimidating parents and kids. When I've been at a bus stop, kids get off the bus, tears in their eyes, saying, are you here to keep me safe? the thing that's going to probably stick with me for the rest of my life is, I was at a bus stop watching the bus approach. One stop down from us, bus stopped, four agents jump out of a car, violently attack a woman, threw her to the ground, handcuffed her in front of her kid. Picked her up, nose bleeding, shoved her in a car, all the while she's screaming, I'm legal, I have my papers, let me go, let me take care of my kid. And her daughter screaming for her mom. the screams, the sobbing, something that'll stick with me, replay in my brain till the day I die. And that's just one story of thousands. I mean, reports of 4,000 arrests and counting. How can our kids possibly learn at school when they're afraid that that they could be picked up, when they see ICE vehicles circling the buildings? That is happening. When they see ICE vehicles staging in the parking lots during school hours, near parks directly adjacent to schools. I mean, this is all happening in the suburbs of Eden Prairie and Minnetonka. And our worst day is probably the best day that the Powderhorn neighborhood in Minneapolis probably experiences. So yeah, this bill is necessary. If we had an administration that cared about school policy, maybe they'd start by caring about the Constitution. I mean, just Google ICE breaking down the doors of private residences. You'll get plenty of examples of our Fourth Amendment being violated blatantly in live time, plenty of video evidence for everybody to see. So I appreciate the letter. I appreciate the sentiment. And I wish that school policy ruled the day here, but it's clearly not the case. And just take one step further. I mean, they are breaking into apartment complexes, also a violation of the Fourth Amendment. What is that going to look like when that happens in a school building? I mean, we've got educators on this committee. You're sitting in class, high school science class, on our unidentified masked agents, part of a paramilitary group, storm into the classroom in a biology class, in a middle school English class. I mean, these are poorly trained but lethally armed ghouls. I'm sorry, but who would choose this as your profession? That are terrorizing our communities. Is this going to happen in an elementary school's art class or a kindergarten classroom at nap time? I mean, this is, yeah, it's like looking ahead, what could happen, but if they're doing what they're doing now, I cannot imagine a situation in which they're not eventually going to start doing that to our immersion schools, like you said, wherever else. So yeah, this bill is 100% necessary. We need to do our job in this committee to pass laws that are going to protect our children at schools. When they're getting off the bus thinking, maybe this is the day that I get arrested, maybe this is the day that my parents are not going to be there waiting for me, they're already thinking about that in their head. At least give them 7-8 hours in a school building where they don't have to be afraid. So please pass 3435. This is necessary, and it's so crucial right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Green.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So I just want to say something to our testifiers. I want to say thank you. And I also want to say very clearly that I believe you. I believe the experiences that you shared today. I believed you when you shared all the worries you have for your students and families. I believe you that ICE has been staging in school parking lots and circling schools during the school day, and that students are at home hiding behind closed blinds. I believe the profound mental health impact this has and continues to have. I believe students who are U.S. citizens have been picked up by ICE. I'm going to say that again. I believe that students in our state who are U.S. citizens have been picked up by ICE. And I believe that tear gas has been used on students and staff. And I believe students, like the student in my district who withdrew from testifying in person today because of fear, and I believe the students who told us she has to carry her passport with her at all times, all based on what she looks like. I believe what is happening to our families and in our schools and our state. And I believe our kids are not okay, and I think we know why. I know we know why. So we need to be really honest in our work here and name what is happening. The federal government is targeting people based on what they look like. This is not about immigration enforcement of criminals or a need for better cooperation. There is a presence and a very real threat happening in real time, unmasked unidentified armed agents on or near school property in the state of Minnesota. That is not okay. That should not be okay with anyone in this room, should not be okay with anyone who serves and represents the people of Minnesota. The actions that they have are telling us they do have no, that they have no concern or care for students and teachers and the harm that they have caused and continue to cause. Attendance, trust, learning, that's just at the very start of things. The fear is palpable in classrooms and home across the state. We heard that today. I've heard that in my district. I've heard it from other schools that have reached out to me across the state. I believe it is outrageous. It is a violation of constitutional rights, and it is wrong. Aren't schools meant to be places of learning, belonging, and stability for all of our kids? And are we really okay with schools and students being collateral damage in all of this? We have a responsibility. It is immediate and practical, and we need to do everything we can to keep schools for education and not enforcement. Thank you, Chair Jordan, for bringing this House file forward, 3435. This is about whether or not children can safely access a public education in Minnesota. That is a core tenet to our values in our state. Whether you are on either side of the aisle, that is something we agree with. And it is critical that we pass it. We have 1 million students in our state who are looking for us to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bierman.
Thank you. I'll be brief, and I just wanted to chime in and thank all of the testifiers here today who have brought your stories forward. I've just heard so many like them in dealing with my school's officials and the parents and seeing it with my own eyes as well. Driving up here last week, early morning, to go by an elementary school after it had been announced that ICE was going to draw down. The first school I came to had two ICE vehicles right across the road, four officers. I pulled over. I waited for some other parents to come. We had a conversation with them. We implored them not to proceed in their operation that they claimed they were there for, that this was a school. It did take one of the administrators to come out who spoke to them as well. They agreed to leave temporarily. They came back shortly thereafter. But I also, a few days before that, noticed that at the high school, they had staked out a position with a couple cars and ICE agents who are in the cars, but they're hunched down or laying down in the vehicle. And I'm sitting there looking at them thinking, how has it become okay with people that we have armed, masked men hiding in cars waiting for students to come out to their vehicle? That's not acceptable. In the world we've grown up in here, in the country we've lived in here, so thank you, Rep. Jordan, for bringing this forward, and let's vote yes.
Thank you, Representative. I would just comment briefly. I want to thank Representative Jordan for bringing this important bill forward. Many of you know that I am a public school teacher, and just as you heard in the brave testimony that our testifiers provided to us here today, our students are hurting. Schools are a place for learning, not as an instrument of fear. And as we move forward and have this discussion here, I want to thank all of the representatives for their decorum. And I want to thank Representative Jordan one last time for bringing the bill. With that, Co-Chair Bennett, up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank the testifiers as well. Very, very good. And especially our young people here, high school students, Samia, and Emily, and I think there are more, but you two in particular, very poised, excellent speakers. You are going to go far in life. Thank you for being part of this. We have passionate people, and I hear the fears. But we need to be honest about what this bill will actually do to solve the situations that we're hearing, that I heard over here, that I heard from the testifiers, because I did not hear about ICE agents roaming inside our schools. I hear about across the street. I hear about in apartment buildings, in the communities, the fear, I totally understand that. But we have to understand that in our education purview here, we're just about what's happening in our schools and what we can do about that. And this bill is not going to solve that problem. What will solve the problem is if our state and local governments will cooperate so that we can get ICE off the streets, out of the communities, away from across the street from our schools, and picking up these criminal illegal immigrants at the jails. So I guess I want to be real here and say I don't believe this particular bill is going to solve the problem that I'm hearing. And therefore, I will be a no vote on it because I do believe it will put some of our schools in a precarious position where you perhaps have a receptionist at the school trying to determine if a warrant is real or not, with potential implications there, and school staff perhaps in legal jeopardy because of what's going on. Allow the schools to do their own things. We should have clear guidelines. I hope that will come down from our attorney general and so on. But I do not believe this bill will solve the problem that I'm hearing. And I understand the fear. It is real. But let's pass bills that will actually solve the issue. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be a no vote.
Thank you, Co-Chair Bennett. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I would be remiss if I didn't also thank the testifiers and thank our students and thank our community members, not only for being so brave here today, but being so brave for so many weeks. I want to be clear that you shouldn't have to do that. You should not have to be brave to go to school. And when we had a teacher say that the bravest thing you can do is go to school right now, that is true. And it shouldn't be that way. And I'm sorry that your federal government has made it so that the bravest thing that you all have to do is go to school, and to our educators that you are educating our children and walking them through this time of fear right now. To clear up some misconceptions, we did have educators testify that ICE is using their school parking lots as staging for immigration aides. This bill would prevent that. This bill would also provide the structure that those school secretaries, those general counsels, and those superintendents are asking for. I would again direct members to your public testimony where school administrators have asked for a return to those federal policies. If members want to continue to work with me, I am happy to view this bill as a floor, as a very low bar that we should be able to achieve where ICE agents are not present on our schools. Let's talk about our bus stops. There's one of my home is a bus stop, my yard is. I have ICE agents come by my home and terrorize my neighbors, all because we live by a bus stop where kids wait to go to Pillsbury Elementary School. For me, to you EL teachers, my mom, I would, even though she's retired, would still say that she is an EL teacher. And every single student she educated was either an immigrant or a child of an immigrant. And one thing she told me, which is the same thing she would tell her students every day before I went to school, was to be kind and be brave. And I know that my mother would also be one of those brave educators who would stand being pepper sprayed by her own government to shield her students while they were being dismissed, which is a real thing that happened at Roosevelt High School in Minneapolis. Those ICE agents did enter that school, and this bill would have prevented those teachers from being tear gassed and those children from being chased by federal agents. I want us to think about as we vote, and Mr. Chair, I am requesting a roll call.
Noted.
And so as you vote, I want to think about what kind of schools you want to have in Minnesota. The kind of schools, what kind of schools do our children deserve? They deserve kind schools where they can be affirmed and play. And the things they should be worried about is, you know, maybe losing a soccer game. That's the kind of thing our kids should be worried about. They should be worried about, you know, I'm glad they don't have to worry about lunch or breakfast at school anymore. But that's the kind of things our kids should be brave about, is how they're going to, you know, ace a spelling test, not whether or not their family is still going to be home for them when they return from school. So I would ask you all to be brave when you think about this and vote. And I would ask you to all vote in affirmative. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion to refer House File 3435 as amended to the General Register.
With that, Co-Chair Jordan motions to re-refer House File 3435 as amended to the General Register with a roll call vote. Ms. Keller, if you could take the roll call for us, please.
Yes. Co-Chair Bennett.
No.
Co-Chair Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Hill, yes.
Hill, yes. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Mueller, no. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative DePell.
No.
Representative DePell, no. Representative Falconer.
Falconer, yes.
Representative Falconer, yes. Representative Fogelman.
Fogelman, no.
Representative Fogelman, no. Representative Gordon.
Gordon votes no.
Representative Gordon, no. Representative Gottfried.
Gottfried, yes.
Representative Gottfried, yes. Representative Green.
Green votes yes.
Representative Green, yes. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, yes.
Representative Keeler, yes. Representative Lawrence.
Lawrence, no.
Representative Lawrence, no. Representative Roach?
Roach, no.
Representative Roach, no.
With seven ayes and seven nays, the motion to re-refer House File 3435 as amended to the General Register does not prevail. And with that, I lay the bill over and cede the gavel back to Chair Jordan.
Okay, our next bill for consideration is House File 3409. And since Rep. Censor Murrah is not a committee member, I will move House File 3409 before us to re-refer the bill to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. With the bill before us, Rep. Censor Murrah, I understand you have an author's amendment to get the bill into the shape you prefer.
Yes.
And I will move the A1 amendment before the committee. Rep. Censor Murrah, can you please speak to your amendment?
Yes, so the A1 amendment takes out the civil remedies portion of the bill. I think that there can be continued discussion about how to ensure accountability for school districts, but at this time we want to really focus on just ensuring that students in Minnesota all have the right to education regardless of perceived or real immigration status. So we are going to, based on some feedback from the school districts, take out that section, continue those conversations about accountability. This amendment also changes the wording on page 2, line 9, from saying it includes school resource officers and inserts does not include, to ensure that there is a distinction for school resource officers and the specific role that they play in the building.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Rep. Censor Murrah, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Jordan and members of the committee. Thank you, Chair Jordan, for bringing the bill, which really illustrated the devastating impacts that ICE has had on our communities over the last few months. My bill asks a really fundamental question. Do we believe that all students in Minnesota, regardless of real or perceived immigration status, are entitled to a free public education? That idea has been the bedrock of our country for many years. I hope it is a fundamental belief that we can all agree on. And if so, this should be an easy vote for this committee. You just heard horrifying stories about what our young people have been through over the last few months. Chair Jordan talked about a school where young people were pepper sprayed. That was a school in my district. That's a school that my four-year-old will go to high school. That was the day that Renee Good was killed. A few hours after, ICE agents went to Roosevelt High School, a school in my district, during dismissal. They pepper sprayed students. They pepper sprayed parents. They pepper sprayed teachers. Our students are not feeling safe at school.
This has driven us to have a new, we've talked a lot about absenteeism. Representative Keeler is on this committee. She's done great work, Representative Bakeberg. We have a new term for absenteeism, which is fear-driven or fear-based absenteeism, which is kids who are too afraid to go to school. So the least that we can do as legislators is to say that here in Minnesota, you should not be afraid to go to school. You should not be afraid to get your education. Everyone, regardless of real or perceived immigration status, should be entitled to a public education in our state. This should be an easy vote today, and thank you for taking the time to listen to me and to the testimony that we will hear. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura, for some timing. I am going to ask my new friend Ari to come up and share their story. I know you have some other testifiers, but we have some kids. So Ari, are you ready for us? Welcome to the committee, Ari. Can you say your name and then share your testimony with us?
My name is Ari Obisokin.
Maybe a little bit louder.
Do I start there? Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Ari Obisokin, and I'm a student at Riverview. I loved my school. I had a great teacher. I played soccer during recess with my friends. I once had a field trip, but it had to be canceled because my school realized it wasn't safe to go on the field trip. Now I'm afraid to go to school. I remember the first time I felt afraid was when my dad was taking me to school and I saw people outside wearing yellow jackets. Protecting the school. That made me realize it's not safe anymore. Before, we used to have 2 third grade classrooms. In my class, we had 25 students. Now there's only 15 students combined. I miss my really good friends because they're now learning online. I feel sad that they don't come to school because they don't feel safe. My teacher is also gone because she now teaches that class. Some days are really challenging because I feel a lot of stress to the point that I get stomach aches, and the nurse has to call my dad to come pick me up. I ask you to please support the Education Protection Bill. Help us bring back all the things that make my school great. I want to learn along with my friends. We all deserve an education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ari. Next on my list, we will go back to our normal order of testimony, starting with Kulia Pringle. And for all testifiers, we are running short on time, so there will be a hard cutoff at 2 minutes. Ms. Pringle, please state your name for the record and then proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I'm here today because this bill is personal. I am an immigrant from Antigua, and I'm here today because I had a right to a public education. That protection meant I was allowed to walk into a public school without fear. It meant I was seen as a child worth educating, not a problem to be questioned or tracked. Education opened doors for me, and it gave me a future. But today, that same sense of safety does not exist for too many children in Minnesota. I work closely with immigrant families across the state. I hear the fears in their voice, parents asking, is it safe to send my kids to school? Children wondering if their classrooms in the place where the family could be exposed. No child can learn from carrying that kind of fear. No parent should have to choose between an education and their family's safety. We do have federal law that exists, but state leadership matters. This bill gives families a sense of protection. This bill makes it clear to every Minnesota family that districts cannot threaten, intimidate, or coerce families. And it prohibits districts from disclosing actual or perceived immigration status. This bill does not change who is eligible for public education. It simply ensures that children can access the education they are already legally entitled to without fear. This is about trust. This is about safety. This is about dignity. And I want to be clear. If children are afraid to go to school, then we are failing them. If families are afraid to engage with schools, we are failing them. So today I ask you to stand firm. We need leaders in this moment. We need bold action in this moment. And we need to say clearly and without hesitation, in Minnesota, we value all children, and all children means all children. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Mustafa Diriye. I am a founder and executive director of Anwar Institute of Learning and Family Center. I am a family advocate, and then I choose this one because A, I'm an immigrant. I grew up a civil war. I am firsthand understand what ICE are doing. I grew up where you have every day scared whether you can go to school or your parents have been abducted because they say something. As a kid, I spent more of my teenager years at the refugee camps. I come to the States for better life and better opportunity. After the high school, I was given the opportunity of education in Minnesota. I went to college. A refugee kid in Otanga refugee camp, Kenya, have no formal education or anything, and went all the way to Humphrey. This because of the opportunity and the education that I received. And I am forever grateful for that. And every child deserves the same. I see all this happening in my community as the East African. We've been called names from being a garbage to all of this. And this week, Randy Fine, who is a state representative in Florida, call us, he will prefer dogs over Muslims. This all insult is nothing to compare, but at least our children deserve. I was 9, 6, 7 years old when a government put a gun in my head. And then I remember Liam, who is a Columbia Heights child, Columbia Heights, he's been abducted by the ICE. That testimony never left me, that I encourage you to find a courage.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Steve Yanowski, Superintendent Richfield Public Schools. We educate all children. I'm an educator, and that's what we do. That's what every school in the state of Minnesota does. That's what every public educator does in the state of Minnesota. We don't ask immigration status. We don't ask political party status. So we educate Republicans, we educate Democrats, we educate independents. It doesn't matter to us. Our job is children, and our job is educating children. You know, it dawned on me as I was preparing for today to support House File 3409, why do we need this when there's a federal case, Plyer versus Doe, that says that this is a federal law? And, you know, I got to spend 2 weeks, not that I wanted to, at our bus stops. Every single afternoon, gentlemen in unmarked SUVs with machine guns and masks were sitting there. Now, I'm not talking about coming into our school. They were doing what their job was. They were out doing their job in the community. And at the same time, our buses were letting our kids off. So every day for 2 weeks in January, I drove to the bus stop along with other team members, and we walked our children from the bus to their homes. These were children who were white children, Native children, Black children, and immigrant children. And I say that because it impacted all of our kids. Imagine your child getting off the bus with armed men in SUVs doing their jobs with machine guns. Will they make the right choice? They're 13 years old. When I was 13 years old, I might have ran at the car because I thought it was cool. Our kids thankfully didn't do that, but we had to take them to their homes because you just can't leave kids in that situation. And so I don't want to be an enforcement agent. I appreciate what Chair Bennett shared. We shouldn't leave superintendents, secretaries, or anybody else in the place to figure this out. We should just take care of it ourselves as the grown-ups in the room and allow schools to educate rather than worry about enforcement and immigration enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is Kyle, followed by Samia. Kyle, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, my name is Kyle Chen. I'm a junior at Eagan High School, and I'm here today because my classmates cannot. Even in Eagan, it's a case where I don't get to see my best friends at school because they're scared. I can't laugh with them at lunch, talk about the test, hang out after school, because they live in fear. My grandfather and my father came to the United States. They're both citizens now. They both came to the United States to get educated for one reason and one reason only, because they believed in America. And because of their sacrifices and because of everything that they've given up, I could be here in this room today living the American dream. These students, whether they are citizens or whether they are not, they're not here to waste your taxpayer money. They're not here to waste our state resources. They're here to learn. And at the end of the day, all they want is what my father wanted, to make a life here in the United States, to make a better life. I'm privileged to have a good community, good teachers, good friends, good neighbors, but a lot cannot. And it's a case here today where you have a decision. You decide whether or not students across our state can live safely and learn safely in their schools because they are Americans. My father is more patriotic than anybody, and these students are no exception. They believe in America, and I know you do too. So with this said, please vote in favor of this legislation because I want to see my friends again. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. Next on my list is Samia. Please introduce yourself again and proceed. After that, I have Dulce.
Hello again, everyone. My name is Samia Mahmood, and I will remind you that I am the student representative on our school board for our high school in our district. So first of all, I want to give you an example of the world-class education that I was able to receive because of teachers who didn't have inherent bias in them. I was able to take a lot of AP classes, join a special program for students who were accelerated in their learning. I was able to participate and be the captain of our speech, debate, and our lacrosse teams, and our vice president of NHS. I've been able to succeed because our teachers only want what's best for our students. Repeating some of the things that have been said already, my mother and my father are immigrants. They are refugees. They are survivors. They came here from Somalia after suffering through a civil war. My mom being separated from her family for years, having to suffer in the United States after living with a family who didn't treat her right at first. And then having me, making sure that I have the best life possible. This is something that every student deserves. It is not something that will cost money, just your humanity and your knowing that every student deserves the same education that a white student does, no matter of their immigration status, because that should be done the legal way. Checking students' immigration status should be done the legal way, just like immigration should, like many of you replied in this session so far. Students deserve equal education in classrooms. Students deserve to feel safe in classrooms. And students deserve to feel like their teachers aren't judging them because of their skin color or the fact that they have a different religion. I'm incredibly disappointed to the people who already voted no on our last piece of legislation. But I'm asking you to find your humanity and vote yes on this piece of legislation.
Thank you. Next on my list to testify is Dulce. And then unfortunately, we are out of time. So we will have to weigh the bill over and come back later, but Dulce, the floor is yours. Please proceed.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Dulce de la Rosa. I am here for my Hispanic people, for my Hispanic friends. So all I want to say is every student deserves an education. Every student deserves an education without being scared, with no matter their immigration status and no matter their color. We should be able to go to school without thinking we'll be taken just for being brown. I have to take the bus every morning. Every morning I have to wake up, look at a page to make sure that it's safe for me to walk outside and walk without being taken and without losing any family. I have woken up every day at 4 a.m, taking my stepdad to work to make sure that he is safe. Take my mom to work every day at 8:30 a.m. just to make sure that she's safe. Sorry. No student should be going through this. No student should be scared to walk outside of their house. I have no friends at school right now because all of them are online. One of my friends hasn't gone out of school because she had ice parked outside her house for a whole week. No one should be going through this. No student, no kid should be going through this. No kid should be worried about their parents being taken away, about themselves being taken away just for being brown. You know, and I know a lot of white people like going to Mexico, Puerto Rico, Hawaii, you know, taking our little trips or whatever. How about thinking if you were in Mexico or in Puerto Rico or Hawaii or in any of those places, and imagine yourself being taken away with your family just because you're white. Just because you're white. Think about that. Put yourself in those shoes of our people, of our brown people being here in America just because we're not white being taken away. USA is a Native American land and Mexican land because most of this land is stolen. Actually, all of this land is stolen by Native Americans and Mexico. And if anyone is illegal here, it should be all of you white people and not the brown people that were here first. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And unfortunately, hand clapping is not permitted in our committee room. We are out of time, Representative Sensenmayer. I'm so sorry, but we will luckily get to see you again. And with that, I lay over House File 3409 for a later date. And members, we will see you next week. And committee is adjourned.